Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Final hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Hope you're powering through on this rainy, crappy hump day. Tim Corbin at the bottom of this hour. Looking forward to that chat with him. Been reading and talking to some people behind the scenes about what's going on at Tennessee. And got to be honest, this is an interesting game because I do wonder if any of this stuff is true that's being floated out there. And they've got a game against A&M, and what if it's resulted, what if the results are like a lot of Tennessee games since Jeremy Pruitt has been the head coach? What if it's a double-digit loss and you don't think that's a possibility? Tennessee's trying to get the attention, or Texas A&M is trying to get the attention of the committee, you know. Rankings came out last night. Somebody can go down in these championship games. And obviously they're rooting for that. And they need to make an impression. They need to figure out a way to try to slide in there. And I don't think just a W over Tennessee, a not-so-good Tennessee team, would get their attention. So what if A&M wins by 17 or 20 points? There's a lot of stuff out there that Jeremy Pruitt isn't safe. Like, it's not a foregone conclusion, and it's what I've brought up before. Yeah, Philip Fulmer has the tag of athletics director, but in the end, we all know if big donors want something done at a school, the AD's not in charge, okay? They're in charge. And they're already rumblings that there are big donors that are saying, yeah, I'm not feeling it for Jeremy Pruitt. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. Now, obviously, this could all change with a big win over A&M, or they lose in overtime or what have you. But I'm painting the worst-case scenario is that it plays out like it's played out a lot this year or a lot under Jeremy Pruitt. And what if it's another lopsided loss? Because right now, with Gus Malzahn being shown the door at Auburn, and when you look at his resume, there's a lot of people, rightfully so, that go, really? You moved on from Gus at that job, which has been it's an extremely difficult job. You've got Alabama right there in the state. You've got LSU, which is a powerhouse. SEC West, which is a powerhouse. And you look at what he's done, and it's like, wow, that's not good enough for you guys. Okay. And so there's a lot of people, yes, there's the Kevin Steele stuff, but I can't imagine that they actually got rid of Gus Malzahn to promote within and have Kevin Steele as their next. It's Auburn, and you never know. It's the SEC. You never know. But I can't imagine.
But it's Auburn.
That they're really going to promote Kevin Steele to head coach. So you've got this Hugh Freeze factor, which we've talked about all season. And there's rumblings on the Hill that there are certain donors that say, hey, Hugh Freeze would be nice here at Tennessee. There's also people putting stuff out there that Hugh Freeze has secretly always spoke highly about the Tennessee job and has always kind of had his eye, a side eye at the Tennessee job. So could there be, if Hugh Freeze is really in the mix at Auburn, could that be, if he truly is, that they get wind that, oh my gosh, Auburn's about to run out there and go hire Hugh Freeze, and they lose by 20 on Saturday. There's people that are starting to say, could there be this mad dash to say, whoa, wait a minute. We would hire you here. Are you really interested in coming? Have you always been kind of looking at this job? Side stare? Now, like I said, it's just rumbling. It's just fodder. It's just stuff. What do they call it in NASCAR? The silly season?
Yep.
It is the silly season in college football. But what do you guys make of that? What do you think how this is all going to play out?
Well, I think we start off by saying there's some people that are completely in their own world and irrational about all this stuff, which makes it the silly season. I'll ask you guys it this way. I think if you're thinking that Pruitt is his whole thing, everything he's done, I'm trying to look at Philip Fulmer and try to read how he thinks. If he honestly is going to change his mind on Jeremy Pruitt, whether they lose by 10 or 40.
No, Philip Fulmer is not. Philip Fulmer is not. Okay, let's just put this on the record. This has nothing to do with Philip Fulmer. Philip Fulmer, his guy is Jeremy Pruitt. We all know that. This has nothing to do with Philip Fulmer.
And you think somebody, you think the boosters would strong arm Philip Fulmer that much?
Yes.
If Philip Fulmer says, I don't want to fire him.
Absolutely. Well, 100%.
Because
So all over whether they lose by three touchdowns or one touchdown.
100%. There's no scenario.
Well, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, so I go back to my original thing. Is that a rational thought, honestly? If they lose by 10, we'll stay with them.
None of this is rational.
If we lose by 40, he's gone. Really? Or do you think they're already going
to
make this
move? But you have to look beyond just this game, too.
You honestly think if Tennessee got blown, their doors blown off 49-7, you don't really think that wouldn't change things on the hill?
Shouldn't.
It's going to factor in, but you have to look beyond one game. I mean, you have recruits that are decommitting.
Yep.
I mean, there are a lot of things that are happening.
Has that happened a lot today? I haven't.
Tennessee keeps – remember that big, sexy recruiting class that we thought where Tennessee is going to be top 10, even top 5 at times? Every time I look, sliding on down the list, sliding down. It's Price is Right. It's going the wrong way. It's getting ready to fall off the cliff. I'm not going to yodel.
Yeah. But here's the other part of this. Those big money boosters, they see the same things that we see, and some of them know the same things that we know. And what I mean by that is Philip Fulmer is very respected. He's in that job because they turned to him and they said, Coach, we need you. We need you to come in and fix this. And so what did he do? At that point, he looked at it and he go, well, I got the ninth choice anyway. I'm going to go get a guy that's – he wants to be a head coach, but guess what? He'll come to old Coach Fulmer. He'll do what Coach Fulmer tells him to do. I can pull the strings behind the scenes, and that's exactly what he's been doing. Now, is he going to go out on his own and bring in Gus Malzahn or even Hugh Freeze? Probably not, because he can't pull the strings with them like he can with Jeremy Pruitt, because they got skins on the wall. Gus Malzahn more so than Hugh Freeze, but they got
need to fire Fulmer too. Is that what you're saying?
Go ahead. No, I mean, if you want to get some stuff done and actually have him leave the head coach alone, that's probably what you would have to do. But you'd have to find the right head coach that can be left alone, because I don't think Jeremy Pruitt can be left alone.
You know what'll happen?
And that's the catch-22 here.
You know what'll happen though? If this plays out, I'll tell you what's going to happen, Philip Fulmer, because we've gotten to know Philip Fulmer over the years a little bit. You know what he would say? I don't need this nonsense. Because once he realizes he truly is that's not how Philip Fulmer's going to roll with this. If this gets to the point where he gets strong-armed behind the scenes and they're like, hey, Phil, I got a check right here that says you're getting rid of Jeremy Pruitt. That's going to pay for a bunch of this buyout. And Bobby over there's got a check, and that's going to pay for that. And, oh, by the way, we got two other guys. Brian's bringing in a check for the new guy. Once Philip realizes he's not in charge, if it gets to that point, you know what he'll do? He'll just walk away. He'll just
retire. Right.
So is that what you want if you're Tennessee?
He's going to retire and say, I don't need this nonsense.
So, again, a complete headless monster, no leadership, no direction. You just brought Philip Fulmer in. Now you're going to have that happen? Is that what you want?
No.
Is that sound thinking?
Well, but do you think it was sound thinking when Philip Fulmer gave Jeremy Pruitt a contract extension before the season?
Definitely
not.
When
he still had 2 years left?
Nope.
Isn't that something that could be thrown back in his face pretty hard?
Yeah, but it's Philip Fulmer.
We let you be in charge, and you gave him a contract extension with 2 years
remaining.
So is that
what you're saying, Darren? These people, whoever these boosters are, that want to make the radical move, pay the money to Jeremy Pruitt, should just go right on ahead and fire Philip Fulmer too?
I didn't say they were gonna. Did I say fire Philip Fulmer?
No, but I think we believe the same thing.
Would walk away and say, I don't need this.
Right. So you know that's part of the equation.
So let me play.
I think Phil would go, I'm not in charge here, let's be honest, and this is not how I want to do it. Because, look, they are going to want, if you're going to do this, it's going to be somebody that's going to do it their way, and Philip Fulmer's not going to be the puppet master behind the scenes, and so that's already going to be a deterrent, and he knows he's not in charge. It'd be pretty easy for him to say, man, I've made my money. I don't need this nonsense. I'm out of here.
If this was a situation, and I know, I guess, technically this year they could get a bowl game, but if this was a situation where they get blown out by A&M and they know they're going to a bowl, I could totally see Fulmer being the Barry Alvarez. And he fires Pruitt, and then he coaches the bowl game because that's truly what he wants. He still wants to be on the sideline. He still wants to be coach. Everybody calls him coach. He still wants to be that. And in some ways, even though he's the AD and he's behind the scenes, he still can do some of that because he's calling the shots. He's working with the O-line. I mean, he's been out at practice. And not that he, if Gus Malzahn comes in here, sure, the AD can come to practice whenever he wants. But Malzahn's not going to, want him being like, well, Gus, I know you've been doing this a long time, but what if you did this? And how about I go over here and work with the O-line? That's not going to work. And so to your point, yeah, I could see Fulmer just saying, nah, if I can't do what I want to do, then why be here?
Well, okay, here's the other part of this. To me, if you're going to go this radical and this hardcore, you've got to know who the next guy is. Because what they've done before is they've made this move and then they've gone shopping around to all kinds of places and gotten turned down by everybody and end up with somebody that they're not that excited about at the end of the day, that nobody's really excited about. So if they know that, I don't subscribe to this, that Freeze is their guy, I wouldn't do it for Freeze. Now, Malzahn is an interesting one. Like, if you knew that you could just wave the magic wand, pay the money, swap out Pruitt for Malzahn.
What if it was for one of those two?
I wouldn't do it for Freeze. Malzahn would not do it.
Why? Just because of?
He's a cheater.
Okay.
He's cheated.
Okay.
He doesn't deserve another chance.
So it's not because you don't believe he's a better coach than Jeremy Pruitt. It's all the.
Well, to me, Malzahn is a better candidate than Hugh Freeze at any school, regardless. Because of the cheating and because he's done more.
I'm with you. And by the way, Auburn, to my knowledge, never got in any trouble on his watch, right?
Especially when you consider it's Auburn, which is certainly a place that you can get nailed and have been nailed many times. Many a coach has been nailed at Auburn. He stayed out of that hot water. I'm sure he pushed the envelope, which you have to do at Auburn, probably anywhere in the West.
Right.
But so I don't think he has that stigma. Hugh Freeze not only rumored, he got spectacularly hit for cheating.
Yeah.
I don't understand the fixation with Hugh Freeze. I never have, but
you don't understand?
No. He's a good coach.
He won a lot of games at Ole Miss at a very tough job.
Yeah. How did he do it?
Well, I understand.
I mean, how do a lot?
You got to understand that's, I mean, fixate. I mean, okay. Are there other coaches? Why would people be fixated on Ben Hallen? Why does he keep getting jobs? What's the fixation on Ben Hallen as a college basketball coach? He's won a lot of games. Yeah, well, what's he also been accused of?
Where did he get somebody on probation? Has he had a show cause? I don't know what you're pulling Ben Hallen out of left field. You changed sports.
Well, I'm just saying there's coaches that have done that, but the fixation is always the winning, the success, and you're, it's like you go, yeah, but they cheated. You go, yeah, I got you. But look at how many games they won, right? I mean, that's the fixation. I understand you're looking at going, yes, but that was the end result. What were they doing to get to the end result? And the problem is most of the fan base or the donors, they go, yeah, I get it, but you know, I also know that he won 10 games, you know, 2 years in a row, and won this bowl game and won that bowl game, and so that's what they're fixated on.
But here's also the double standard. Now, we could probably spend an entire segment or more naming coaches that didn't get caught, but we're pretty sure that there was funny business going on, but they're fine. And you may even have some proof, but they didn't get busted by the NCAA. They didn't get a show cause. They didn't get any of the punishment, but you know, yet we're good with that. But then if you get busted and you actually have punishment and you lose your job, it's like, nope, you're blackballed. You shouldn't get another chance. That, to me, that's the double standard. And I think that there are, and I'm not saying Gus Malzahn is one of those guys.
But this is a different discussion. We're getting into coach. I'm looking at the Tennessee job and the history since they fired Philip Fulmer. They got the guy they wanted, which was Lane Kiffin, which eyebrows were raised, right? That's who they wanted. That's they didn't have, you know, they didn't get turned down by a bunch of guys. I don't know, but what happened with the Gruden any number of times? Let's just throw him aside, right? But they were excited about Lane Kiffin. That raised eyebrows, right? He had failed at the Raiders. He was really young, but they thought he was the hot up and coming name. We know what happened there. He left. He didn't get fired. He didn't completely fail. He got in some hot water. It was crazy. He did some good things on the field. He had a lot of violations, and then he bolted. From there, they were in a bad position to hire. At that point, they ended up with somebody that they didn't really want to have in Derek Dooley, right? Dooley fails. They get Butch Jones. They were turned down by a bunch of people there before they got to Jones, who was maybe a B in terms of hot names. And then we know what happened the last time, total chaos. So in my mind, after 3 years, if you're going to do this again and start all over again after you've struck out so many times,
you're saying you've got to have the
you
guy.
You better have the guy that you know is going to take the job. And I don't – is Malzahn just going to hop back in the saddle? It's happened in the SEC before. Like Tommy Tuberville 1 year was coaching Ole Miss, and then the next year he was coaching Auburn, right?
But yep. He didn't get fired at Ole Miss. He left, right?
He left to take Auburn, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yep, he did. And by the way, there's rumors out there that Auburn is going to try to lure Lane Kiffin away.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin addressed that. He was asked about it.
He's not running from anything.
Did you hear what he said?
No.
He goes, listen, you know, I know there's a lot out there, but I'm going to pull one from my mentor, and under no circumstances will I coach at Alabama. I am not going to Alabama. And then he laughed, and he goes, I probably shouldn't have said that, but I had to.
So let me ask you guys this. If Tennessee were to say Gus Malzahn is our next coach, would he have the highest credentials of any head coach they have hired since Philip Fulmer? It's not even close.
Well, I think we know the answer.
Not even close.
No, yeah.
Come on.
So that, to me, is the only way that you do this, that it would make any sense at all, and it would be extremely costly, right? And Gus Malzahn then would probably be able to buy the state of Tennessee and maybe Mississippi and Alabama too, because he's have so much money. He's getting paid, what? He's getting $12 million.
Well, this is why it would make sense.
He's getting $10 million by January 12th or something?
Yes, yeah. Correct.
So he can put a down payment on about a couple, three or four cities.
So you go to Gus and you go,
some planes.
You want to stay in the big time? You want to stay in the SEC, right? Big time college. On the top of mind, you're not even going to go away, out of sight, out of mind. You don't have to work your way back. Right here. Here's an opportunity. But we need you to kind of come in at a discount, you know, because Auburn's giving you all this. Can you come in for a little bit cheaper? We're having to pay off Jeremy Pruitt and his staff. Can you do a little bit cheaper?
Here's Jimmy Sexton's number. See what he says. Good luck with that.
Well, you can at least try.
Jimmy goes, Philip, hey, you know, love you. Love working with you. But no, we're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah. Jimmy's the agent for all these guys. You think Jimmy's going to give one person a discount as a solid? No. I don't think so.
Well, but he does have the power to tell his agent, hey, you know. can take a little bit of a discount to stay at a big program.
Why does he need
but
to do that?
But why would you do that? You have the you have all the leverage. If you're Gus Malzahn,
does he?
You,
does he?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm asking, is he going to be the hot commodity out there?
Yeah,
we just
I
got
think
done
for
saying. I would take his credentials 10 times out of 10 over Hugh Freeze.
We both, but is he going to be a hot commodity in college football? What's the opening
not?
That he's going to? Okay, tell me where he's going.
He doesn't have to go anywhere. He can get paid
$10
million
that's the
on
choice.
January 12th.
Do you want to stay being a head coach at a big-time program, or do you want to go sit
well,
for a while?
Tell me the, job, sits, tell the jobs that are open.
That's what I'm offering you. You can be right back on the sidelines right now. Big-time program, you stay in the conference. Or you can go sit for a while and be out of sight, out of mind.
What are you paying me? It's two different things to say if you're offering me the job at market value or you're asking me to take a discount.
I'm just telling you, when you say he's going to be a hot what's his landing spot? Well, tell me where his landing spot
any
would be.
I don't know if it's this year, and that's where he has leverage. If Tennessee comes to him and says, hey, we're willing to make a move and bring you in right now, would you be willing to take a discount? He can look at them and laugh and go, no, because there's going to be more jobs open next year. And, yes, I do think he'll have suitors that they'll be coming after him, whether it's the SEC or out of the SEC. But he will have schools that are coming for him, but I think there'll be more available next year than there would be right now. So that's where he has leverage.
Big-time program?
Yes. Are you kidding?
Look at his
record
question.
In the SEC West.
I don't know.
39-27 in the league. National championship game. National title as an offensive coordinator.
So, okay, let me just throw a hypothetical here. Because we know, A, how college football works, and we know that there is some stuff that's floating out there. What if some of this stuff that's floating out there with LSU gets a little bit bigger? You think LSU would be interested in Gus Malzahn if they had to make a change?
Orgeron's not getting fired.
I understand. That's why it's a hypothetical, but there's stuff out there.
Well, there's not. It's ended. He just went to Florida and beat Florida. He's not going.
I know,
anywhere.
But there. I'm talking about there's
the end of
other
next
stuff.
Year.
Yeah, and into next year. And they're going to be better. I know that. But I'm saying there's some off the field stuff that's been floating around.
Well, yeah, they're not going to a bowl game. Look, they're not afraid to punish themselves. Come on.
How noble of them.
They have admitted fault.
If this doesn't work with the,
we are not going to stand for that. We're not going to a bowl.
If this doesn't work with the Pirate, Mississippi State,
I'd hold out. If I had Gus Malzahn, I think get something better. I'd get something better than that.
Okay, would you rather be on the sidelines of Tennessee or Mississippi State?
Tennessee.
Okay,
I think Tennessee would give you a better chance.
Well, facility. I mean,
but who now? You're bringing in something here. I got to know if I'm Gus Malzahn. Philip Fulmer staying? Is he leaving? Got a new AD? Who's the AD? Who's my support system?
Jeff just asked, how about Gus to Michigan?
Not out of the realm, but I don't know if that's a fit.
Does that sound like a Michigan hire to me?
It doesn't sound like a Michigan guy, but.
No.
They kind of tend to do their own thing, and I don't think Gus Malzahn is a typical Michigan thing. At least it doesn't feel that way.
I mean, to your point with just looking at the SEC, the big cream of the crop jobs are not going to be available. I mean, Alabama's not, Texas A&M won't, Florida, Georgia. But Tennessee, if it is, certainly going to be attractive to him. And if there's a surprise job that does open up, then yeah, I do think Gus is in the mix.
You asked if Gus has the best resume of everybody they've hired after Philip Fulmer, and we all know that's a what?
Yes.
That's a no-brainer?
Yes.
No-brainer.
You know who else has got no-brainers?
Who's that?
DraftKings. They got no-brainers. Segway. Feels like just yesterday that Los Angeles was lifting basketball's most coveted prize. Since then, we have introduced a new class of professional basketball players through the draft and seen a few marquee names switch teams. Luckily for all of us sports fans, DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is here to kick off the 2021 basketball season with a no-brainer, there's a key word, no-brainer, for all customers new and existing. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, head to the App Store right now, download it, and you don't want to miss this because the return to basketball, DraftKings Sportsbook is going to give you any team of your choice on opening night plus 75 points. Yeah, that's right. All you have to do is bet on any team on opening night. And if your team doesn't lose by more than 75 points, you will double up your money. This Saturday, there will be an endless amount of action to get in on, so don't wait. Head to the app right now. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, you'll get a plus 75-point spread on opening night for the team of your choice, and you can double up your money. That code again, 1025THEGAME. Double up your money on opening night for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. On this Wednesday afternoon, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Vanderbilt was down as much as 23. To the Spiders of Richmond.
24.
Was it 24? I saw it at 23.
I think it was 24 and a half.
Was it? Okay, so 24. We'll go with that. And Vandy's cut it down to 9 midway through the second half. They are on a roll. So it's interesting. Looked like a game that was way over. Vanderbilt has come storming back. Speaking of Vanderbilt, let's head over to West End. Let's bring in best baseball coach in America. Tim Corbin is on the line with us. Tim, how you doing?
Good, D. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. How is everything in your world these days?
Good. I mean, it's pretty simple right now. We're driving up to New Hampshire, so we stopped in West Virginia, and you know, going to keep moving on here in the next few days and just kind of making more of a nicer trip out of it.
That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you carving out a few minutes for us. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt has found their next guy as the football coach. You know a little bit about this hire. What can you tell us about Clark?
Well, I knew him a little bit when he played here. He was we had a baseball connection. As many people know Clark, he started out as a baseball player first at Belmont and then transitioned to Division I football in the SEC at Vanderbilt, which is, I would say, very difficult to do. But then as he proceeded and moved through coaching, we kept in contact. And he was one of those guys that was always very curious, always wanted to learn. When we would meet, we met at Waffle House, we met at our office. He was very inquisitive about culture and about environment. And I remember him asking questions that so few coaches would ask. They were very particular. He was very definitive in his thoughts. And I just always found him to be really clear and very smart. So, I felt at some point in time, whether it was 38 years old or 48 years old, I felt like he had the fibers to be a head coach one day.
How good of a baseball player was he, Tim?
Dave Jarvis would probably be better suited to ask that question, but Clark probably didn't think much of one since he transitioned quickly to football. So, I hitting that little white thing is difficult sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt. How do you – you know, we've talked to you through this, and you know, your program is no different just difficult how it all had to come to an abrupt ending. And we've talked to you over the years about just the situation at Vanderbilt. And at times, you know, everybody has felt like maybe they were handcuffed or you just weren't giving all the resources that you needed. And you have obviously worked through all that over the years. Mm-hmm. We had Candace on yesterday, and she obviously speaks very, very highly of you. And I know you've spoken highly of her. When you look at the lay of the land, now that you've been there for so long, as we're getting real close to going into 2021, how do you think the lay of the land looks over on the campus, and more importantly, for what you do for athletics moving forward right now?
Well, I'm very encouraged by it because you're right. I love Candace. I mean, I think Candace is a person of substance, and I think she was much looking for a coach and a teacher with those same type of fibers. The other thing that Candace is she's very competitive. She does not like to lose either. But the cool part of Candace is, which, you know, I started with all that extra time during the course of the months, really started researching female leaders in the world that were handling the COVID situation. And there were so many great examples. And I just think Candace has the fibers of a lot of those world leaders that, you know, not that she's a world leader, but she's an athletic director and she's a very important leader inside our university. But I think what she has is she has discipline, she has empathy, she's competitive. And, you know, as difficult as it is to let a coach go, she handled it in a way that I don't think a lot of males could. I just think she has a great way of raking off and handling a very difficult situation because of her personality. Now, in this time, what I think Daniel has found out too, that Daniel Diermeier, the chancellor, is he's got a great leader in athletics, and she just needs time. What Candace can't do, though, is she can't concern herself with what Vanderbilt has been. That doesn't matter anymore. That's the past.
Yeah.
The future is in the front dashboard. That's all that matters. So trying to answer the thoughts and the whims of people and said, well, this has always been the way. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't always have to be that way either. A baseball program was a certain way at some point in time, and then you just have to move forward. So I think Candace is very good at that, and I do, and I mentioned Daniel, but I think she's working right next to the right gentleman. I mean, he's saying things that, you know, I haven't heard from a lot of chancellors, whether it be Vanderbilt, Clemson, what have you. I mean, this guy is certainly very understanding of what athletics does to a university, regardless of what your university is about. Just sees athletics as another way to build programs and strong programs at that. So I'm very encouraged by him, and I'm certainly encouraged by my friend Candace because I do. I think the world of her.
We're talking to Tim Corbin, head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. And, Corbs, I'm interested to hear you talk a little bit more about creating the culture, creating an environment, because with football especially, the first notion you have a lot of times is, okay, he's a defensive coordinator, so what's his offense going to be, and who's his coordinator, and are you going to throw it, run the option, spread, all of these things. But in hearing you talk, I seem to hear you think sometimes, even in college football, where the scheme is important, that – the environment you create and the culture you create is gonna mean, if not the same, even more than the actual schemes that you run.
It's everything, Willie. I mean, it's everything, and I think the coordinator position or thought process can be overblown sometimes. Whether you're an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, it no longer matters because you now are a CEO of a small little company. And in some cases, big company. But I think the most important thing is being organized mentally and gathering people and creating harmony. And in Clark's case, he's got a very difficult position. And I would say everyone in college football has a difficult position. I do not think we've done athletic males in general a service by allowing them to transfer on a whim, opt out on a whim. You got name, image, and likeness. So really what you're teaching males is they can escape anything when it gets tough. They can move forward anytime it gets tough. And they can move to something that's greener and in their minds better. And I just think that we're not doing males a service that way. I mean, imagine opting out of a marriage because you just don't like your wife anymore. You don't like how she raises the kids. You don't like how she cooks. I'm just going to opt out, and I'm going to move to something better. That's what we're teaching our males. So I think in Clark's case, he just needs to make sure that he can define the word commitment and then internalize it for those kids so they understand what being totally committed to a teammate and to an organization means. And that's first and foremost. When you remove individualization and you move from independence to interdependence, and your kids on the team understand what interdependence means, then they start playing for a bigger cause. And the bigger cause are the people around you and the university and the name on your chest. So I just think that that's the area that he's going to have to confront first.
Are there more similarities between Clark Lea and James Franklin than it might appear on the surface?
Yeah, I mean, personalities are different.
Right. But Joe's article talking about maybe James Franklin more behind the scenes. We all saw the flamboyant character interviewing anywhere he could go, selling everywhere he could go. But you talked about the infrastructure he created, and it sounds like there's a parallel there with Clark Lea.
Yeah, I do. I do think there's some similarities there because I think they're very intentional on what they want to do, and they're very organized mentally, too. And they're not waiting around. They're active participants in their own growth themselves. And I think that's the thing. You can't get into a position and say, we need this, we need this, we need this, we need this, we need this. It isn't about needing everything right now. It's about forming a family and pulling groups of people together, whether it's staff members or whether it's the playing participants themselves. And I think there's a lot of similarities in how they will go about that, because they both, when you talk to them, and you know, the many conversations I have with football coaches and basketball coaches alike and soccer coaches, I mean, you guys like Anson Dorrance, the women's soccer coach at North Carolina, or Gino Auriemma at Connecticut, they're different. They're talking about different things. They're on to things that young coaches aren't. And that just doesn't have to be a young coach thing. That has to be a person that's the wherewithal to stick to the things that are important. And it's usually the smaller things that are most important. You've got to do the small things well inside of a family first before the outcomes start identifying positivity. And that's where I think Clark and James are like. They identify the necessities, the things that are meaningful, the things that matter to an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid. And if you start working on those things, then your scoreboard and outcomes are going to change, and then the following that is going to start following the program and following what you do is going to become greater. But that can't be the impetus of what you're doing. The impetus has to be the kids and the structure of your organization.
Tim Corbin is with us, the baseball coach over at Vanderbilt. Yesterday when we had Candace on, I asked her this question, and I'll pose it to you, that you always hear, well, you know, Vanderbilt could be like Northwestern, they could be like Duke, they could be like Stanford, having, you know, high academic standards but also being competitive with athletics. And I'm curious of your point of view on that, because you've had success. You've won two national championships and are contenders every year in baseball. But When you hear things like that, how far off do you think Vanderbilt really is of people saying, well, hey, this school over here could be like Vanderbilt?
Well, I don't think it takes very long. You're just going to get the ball rolling a little bit first. But I think our greatest advantage, and has always been, is the school itself. Because to me, that was the most appealing thing that Maggie and I saw, was, okay, from a mental standpoint, you can attract kids, and your school itself is going to help develop your kids mentally. That, to me, is the most appealing piece of this. And I do think football, and James found this out too, to me, it's a great advantage. So many coaches would say, or Major League Baseball sometimes, when we've had to go against them in the recruitment for a kid, is saying, well, you're going to spend too much time in a classroom and not enough time on the baseball field. That's the biggest farce I've ever heard. Your ability to develop the hard drive of a young male so that he can work on his software, which is his skills, which is his athletic skills, is paramount. If you can't get that right and he has no direction, then it's going to be very difficult to develop those athletic skills that can help him. And I just think that that's the biggest part of Vanderbilt. And I don't really think it takes that long when – now, I know what we're doing here, and I understand that our football program, we have to walk before we run right now. But I also know, and we saw with our own eyes, what happened once momentum starts moving in the right direction. And I never look at that situation and say, geez, that's so far away. That's not far away. And that isn't just building a new football stadium either. This is, as I said, it's just about getting some momentum first and getting the right kids and finding your niche. We have to find a niche. I mean, hell, I've been here 19 years, had 19 different football helmets. Okay, so, you know, whether it's Wisconsin or Notre Dame or Penn State, you got to know who the hell you are. That's paramount. Know who you are and do it well. But be you, be your personality. And we've got an extraordinary personality, academically and athletically.
Do you ever take time to, based on what you just said, to kind of think back to what it was like when you first got there and what the baseball program was like, and then all the work that you and your staff put in to take it to what it is now, and think, how the hell did I pull this off? Just because of how far you've come in those 19 years?
Not often, no. I think, you know, I feel fortunate that I can look straight ahead and know where I am. I really haven't mentally pulled off to a rest area and said, wow, this is good what we're doing, and never feel any type of satisfaction. I feel like a coach that's in a chair that's on two legs. You know, if it comes all the way over and lands on four legs, then you're too comfortable. If it falls all the way back, it means you've crashed. So I think it's a balancing act. It's balancing your mind, it's centering yourself, and just understanding that success and opportunity are very fleeting. I rent my position at Vanderbilt, and it can be taken away from me at any time, and I realize that. So I'm going to make it very difficult for anyone to take it away from me because, number one, I love it, I'm passionate about it, and I do look forward. I do look forward to what's next. And not that I don't reminisce about certain things, because I think that's healthy just to help you moving forward, but at the same time, I don't spend too much time in that lane.
Tim, we really appreciate it. Hope you, Maggie, and the girls, happy holidays. Have a Merry Christmas. And we look forward to talking to you this upcoming baseball season. Fingers crossed,
okay.
Right? Everything's good.
Yes. It's going to happen. I appreciate you guys as well. Thanks so much. Happy holidays to all of you.
Love hearing that. Tim, thank you very much. That is Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt baseball coach. We will come back and put a bow on Wednesday's show next.
The end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our life.
Always good to talk to Tim Corbin. We appreciate him joining us. Speaking of Vanderbilt, they were down 24 at the half. They're at Memorial Gym, hosting the Richmond Spiders. Richmond is 4-1 on the season. Vanderbilt came into this basketball game 2-0 on the year, and Richmond was up 24 at the half. I think Vanderbilt, the closest I've ever seen them, or the closest I've seen them get in the second half was, I think, 9. If they got below that, let me know. But I saw 9. Right now it's 78-65, so Richmond up 13 with about 1:40 to go in this one. Vanderbilt has been hanging tough and really fighting and scrapping in the second half. And as we talked about earlier, they're down some key guys. And so Richmond came in this game 6-7 point favorite in Nashville. So that just shows you some of the key players out for Vanderbilt. But give them credit, man. They have not gone away. They could have folded up the tent and said, it's not our day. Down 24 at the half, and they did just the opposite. So 78-65 with a minute and a half to go.
Didn't get to see what happened in the first half, why they got behind by so much. It has been hard. I even thought it took them a while. Remember, they couldn't practice or anything for a while. They had finals. They played Sunday. I don't know how often they'd really been on the court since they shut things down between the first game and the second game. But disappointing to get that far behind on your home court, even down a couple of guys. But there's so many new guys. They've got to try to somehow be able to gel and get better as the season goes along. I think there's something better than what they showed today, but it is nice to see them fight back and play better in the second half.
Yeah, they shot 23% in that first half. That really hurt them a lot, too. And, of course, they ended up shooting like 65% in the first 10 minutes of the second half, too, and that helped out a lot when you're hitting a lot of threes like that. And Richardson's pretty good, too. I mean, even if Vanderbilt was at full strength, for them to be within, like, 10 points of Richmond isn't bad at all, because you saw what Richmond did to Kentucky, and you see what Richmond's doing right now. They put on an offensive clinic in that first half.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have started the game at 1.
Instead well, it helped
of them. I don't understand why you want to start that early. I guess for TV purposes, but...
Yeah, I guess. I am looking forward to seeing what the second year with Jerry Stackhouse looks like, because, you know, he was paid so many compliments last year of the buy-in that you saw out of these guys. So just how you can build off of that. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do.
Hate to end on this note, but, you know, we need to say a lot of you have seen. If you haven't, unfortunately, we're very sad here today at ESPN 102.5 The Game, because one of our colleagues, somebody that the three of us look up to very much so and have dealt with for many, many, many years, a well-respected guy, Floyd Reese, has resigned.
Yep.
So just wanted to pass that along, just let him know that we're thinking about him and really have appreciated everything that he's brought to the table. Like I said, Willie and I used to do an hour with him on Fridays when he was the general manager of the Titans. Friday for an hour in drive time. You know, and he's
did
the
an hour
guy.
With Sally too.
No, I didn't do an hour with Sally. But she had a very long segment that probably felt like at least an hour when it was over. Got quite the attention, but
yes,
he is. He's the same guy that, you know, today that we were dealing with him. And he's the general manager of the Titans. Just like I said, a well-respected guy. Really appreciated being around him and working with him over the years. Wish him nothing but the best.
Agreed. Yeah. And like you said, Darren, we go so far back with Floyd Reese. He is one of the great ambassadors of pro football here, because he was one of the very first, as the Oilers were making the transition from Houston, that was accessible and fantastic with the media, engaging. That's what's made him a successful asset for us for all these years that he's been part of 102.5 The Game. So we were sad to see that for sure. So, and you know, all of the reasons behind it are certainly up to him, and we respect that. And so we want to say we wish him well, and we've enjoyed the heck out of working with him, getting to know him.
Yeah, I echo that, and I'll say it this way too. Because I think it was different for me, because you guys covered him and worked with him when he was the GM of the Titans. I was just a kid growing up in Nashville and knew he was the general manager of the football team that I watched. And then, you know, when I saw their success and what they did, and then when I got into this career and the first time that I got asked, hey, can you co-host with Floyd? I'm sitting there going, wait, the guy that built the team I watched, like, I get to work with him now? Like, that's so cool. So, GM, always appreciate you for putting up with me, and I consider you a friend.
And on that note, we will call it a day. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Continue to be safe, because we want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Closing.